Probably going to finish up on this series that we've been in on the sin of discontentment. And tonight I'm going to finish up with this line of thought, the wickedness of discontentment among Christian people. Now, last week we did bring one point out under this heading, that discontentment is rebellion against the providence of God. And we use Saul as an example. And we learned that it's never right for us to take matters into our own hands and to rebel against the instruction and the providence of God. We've got to learn to be content with His providential dealing in our lives. Anything less leads to rebellion and stubbornness and idolatry like that of Saul, who was the king of Israel, who was deposed for his rebellion. But secondly, discontentment. Now, again, think about what I'm saying here. Discontentment characterizes the lives of the ungodly, the unsaved, who live according to the lust of the flesh. And as God's people, we're called to live and behave as the children of the light, reflecting the image of the Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, when we're discontent with God's providence, with His provision, with His protection, whether we want to admit it or not, the fact is we're acting like those who are unsaved, who are void of spiritual discernment. Jude 16 says, "These are murmurers, complainers, walking after their own lusts, and their mouths speaking great swelling words, having men's person in admiration because of advantage." So, we need to be careful not to murmur and complain against God like the reprobate do, like the ungodly do. That's the way of their life. We ought to have a distinct difference about the way we view things. And then number three, discontentment is a bad testimony. This is why it's wicked for us to be discontent as Christians, as believers. It's a bad testimony for us to have before this unsaved world. When we express discontentment, when we're murmuring, when we're complaining, whether it be about things large or small, we're in effect saying that our lives are no better than those who are without God. Now, to me, that's a major problem. If anything, we ought to show with our lives that even the worst of days are great in comparison because of God's grace, because of forgiveness, because of God's power working in us both the will and to do of His good pleasure. People ought to see that there is something distinctly different, wholesome, and powerful about God's grace working in us. But if all we do is complain and bellyache and we're discontent, we're saying, hey, we're no better off than you are. And we cannot be effective in our witness for the Lord if we cannot show the world that we're satisfied with Him and the circumstances that He's placed us in. Look over with me to Philippians chapter 2. And this is what Paul urges us to do before the unsaved. He says in verse 13, and again, be mindful of who is writing this and where he's writing it from. Paul the Apostle is writing this from prison. All right? He has been unjustly accused and imprisoned simply because of his testimony for the Lord Jesus Christ. If there was ever a time that a guy, as far as I'm concerned, in my way of thinking, here's a guy that's serving the Lord, doing everything he can to further the gospel of Christ. Wherever he was making Christ known. And yet he was imprisoned for his efforts. So if there was ever a guy that you might say, you know what? Maybe he's got some room to complain and murmur a little bit. But you don't see, you don't hear that out of him. In fact, this entire epistle, if you were to take one word that characterizes the tenor of it, that one of the main themes of Philippians is rejoicing. So even in the worst of circumstances, being imprisoned unjustly for the cause of Christ, listen to what he said, what he writes here. Verse 13. For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Do all things without murmuring, without murmurings and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. You remember that sermon I preached last year on this passage? What the world needs right now? They need to see Christians who are living in such a way that we're living above the fray. We're not murmuring. We're not disputing. But we're thriving in the grace of God, overcoming obstacles, overcoming the world by faith, living for the Lord, walking with the Lord, trusting the Lord. But again, if we're dragging around, acting like our life is so miserable, and people are always hearing us complain or murmur, I don't think it's a good... our testimony won't be believable. If we acknowledge and believe that God is working in us, let's be careful not to complain against His providence. Number four. The state of discontentment is foolish if we really believe in the absolute sovereignty of God and that He has ordered all the affairs of life. If we indeed agree with Ephesians 1 and verse 11, where it states that God works all things after the counsel of His own will, then we have to admit that we accomplish nothing when we have a discontented attitude. We waste time by complaining against God's providence in our lives when He's the one that has ordered it. For our good, for His glory. And I can't speak for you. Because I may not be going through what you're going through. The trials that you're facing. The setbacks that you may, and the obstacles that you may have to overcome. But this one thing is definitely true in all of our lives, and that is we've got to trust that God knows best. You see, we provide a terrible example to friends, family, and the world at large when we murmur about things large and small. Again, look at the life of Job. I know you remember when I preached the little series on Job. That wasn't long ago. But again, you take a guy that had every reason to complain. Everything was taken from him. First, it was his possessions. Then it was his family. Then it was his health. And to top it all off, right at the end, you know, when after all this stuff has passed, his wife starts nagging him. And she said, why don't you just curse God and die? And Job said this. He had to rebuke his wife for her foolish behavior. He said, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? And we do well to remember that verse, Job 2:10, when we're tempted to engage in the foolishness that is discontentment. If God has ordered things, and we believe He's sovereign, and that He has our best interest at heart, that He's working all things after the counsel of His own will, that He's working all things for His glory and for our good, and that it's according to a purpose, that it's not accidental, that God is doing this to better us, not to embitter us. You see the folly. It doesn't make sense to complain. And then lastly, discontentment is evil because it hinders our service to God. What is our ultimate aim? What is our goal as believers? Hopefully to glorify God in every circumstance of life, through obedience and cheerful submission to His will. I remember when I was a young man working for my dad, and one of his famous anecdotal statements was, "You got to learn to take the bitter with the sweet." I never forgot that. I mean, it's a biblical principle. But we have to learn to take the bitter with the sweet if we're going to truly glorify God on a daily basis. And we can't be jealous of people and envious of people that seemingly everything just seems to glide right along for them. And it may not be that way in your life. See, it is the reality of life that you and I are going to face difficulties, afflictions, hardships, disappointments, failures, and trials. That's life. And you know, you can't shield your kids from that either. Your kids need to know that failure is a part of life. That not everybody wins at everything. That not everything is easy. We have to learn that God has sovereignly ordered and appointed all things for our good. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. If we are to serve well, we have to acknowledge and embrace the all things that God has placed in our lives. Sometimes it's financial setbacks, health problems, time management. I can remember I was 22 years of age. I wasn't married, living in one-room apartment, basically. And I worked 6 days a week. And that included Sunday afternoon. I went to church in the morning, went to work on Sunday afternoon, and then back to church at night. And then I had to be in at 4 a.m. every Monday morning to clean the cases and reset the meat cases. And then I would get off at like 1 o'clock, but I'd go home and take about an hour nap, and then I'd study the rest of the night because I had school the next day, college classes. I would leave my house at about 6:30 in the morning and get back at 11 at night because I had all my classes scheduled on a Tuesday at Temple Baptist College. So basically, for almost 3 years, that was my schedule year-round, even in the summer, because I wanted to get everything done. And I can remember back then thinking, you know what, if I can just make it through this week, I'm going to see some light at the end of the tunnel. And it was so difficult. I was trying to serve the Lord in the church, but I look back at that, and I know that God used it, even though at that time I felt burdened and troubled. And then when I got married, I didn't feel burdened and troubled when I got married. I mean, I was happy and still am, but we started having children. We did not have enough money. All my family said, you can't afford all those kids. Well, I'm going to tell you something, man. You can't afford kids. It's a fact of life. But you know what? You just trust the Lord. You go week by week and you pray for their health. You pray that God will provide your needs. I can remember when my wife and I thought it was a really big deal on a Sunday night after church. There was I don't know if it was Arby's or one of those kind of restaurants there in Xenia, Ohio, where we lived. And if we got to split a blueberry milkshake, we thought, man, that's living, man. What I'm saying is, God brings you through things. He brings you through what seems to be something that is so difficult you don't know whether or not you're going to make it through. But if you look back, you see that as you trusted the Lord and you depended on Him, that He brought you through. And that can be said of a lot more serious things than the things I just talked about. Illnesses, heartaches, disappointments. The point is, if you're saved by the grace of God, you've seen God's hand work in your life. You have no reason to be discontented. You have every reason to believe that God is going to work it all out, one way or another. Because He's right. He does right. And I'll close this study. We're going to start on the beauty of contentment. But I don't know if I'm going to do it next week or not. I don't know if I've got everything in my mind right and prepared to get into that yet. But we are going to go through the beauty of contentment. Now realize this has been a pretty long series because we had a lot of things that I think a lot of people don't ever consider when it comes to discontentment. But I like this quote from Jeremiah Burroughs. He wrote this in the 1600s. He said, "Oh, what an ugly face has this sin of murmuring and discontentedness. Oh, what cause is there that we should lay our hands upon our hearts and go away and be humbled before the Lord because of this? Whereas your thoughts were wont to be exercised about providing for yourselves and getting more comforts for yourselves, let the stream of your thoughts now be turned to humble yourselves for your discontentedness. Oh, that your hearts may break before God, for otherwise you will fall to it again. Oh, the wretchedness of man's heart." May God deliver us from this evil of being discontented when we ought to be resting in Him. All right, that's the end of that portion of our study. Josh, we got to take care of a couple things tonight, business meeting wise.